It's time to relax with the Offspring.
Good morning, Dexter.
Good morning. Good morning. Now, today I have my John Fogerty shirt on. I know you had your John Fogerty shirt on yesterday.
I did.
It reminded me that I needed to wear mine. John Fogerty gave me this shirt, by the way.
It's kind of
just, you know, one of those, not name dropping or anything. Just
it's flannel weather outside.
We got
some
big
rain coming through.
It's so comfortable. It's great. It's made by Fortunate Sun and...
There you go.
You should go. I'm sure there's a .com somewhere.
Probably. FortunateSun.com or JohnFogerty.com.
Yeah. We're here doing a podcast. I'm so happy to be here doing this again. We haven't done that many of them, but they're fun, right? We just do them for fun.
It is fun.
We want to share ourselves with the people, right? We're not getting paid for this.
We're not getting paid?
Wait a minute.
James and I are out of here. We got to go make some money. We'll take you to double-double later.
Yeah, that's right. The viewers at home will notice there's not even any advertising. We sell no advertising. We're just doing this with love, with joy in our hearts. That's why we're doing this, right? Just to share our love with the people and hang out, right?
That's right.
For the kids.
So cheers.
Well, I'm now adults.
Well, I was hoping for shameless commercialism. I'm sorry. I'm not jiving with this at all.
He's here to promote.
Our drinks in nondescript solo cups. Nondescript plastic
by Solo.
Cups.
Thank you.
That's right.
Yeah, so you can't tell I'm drinking Topo Chico.
That's right. That's the idea. So what's new with you? What's going on? What's the latest?
Nothing. Dude, we were here yesterday, and, you know, I've just been dealing with an aging parent.
Yeah. How's that going, or do you want to talk
about
it?
It's going all right. You know, my dad's he's just up there, and he just needs a lot of care. You know, he doesn't remember stuff. He's still got his wit about him. Like, he's just, and his humor's gotten worse, just horrible. But it's funny. You would really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. The Archie Bunker comes out, you know.
It does. It really does. You know, my dad has never been crude or crass or any of that. And all of a sudden, the last year, like, whoa, Dad. Cool your jets, man. Where the hell's this coming from? Yeah, it's wild.
I have a very underdeveloped frontal lobe, so I think nothing will change as I age.
Good for you.
Well, this is great. Tell us more about your father's declining health.
Yeah, I know, right? That's an uplifting thing.
Way to bring it up, dude. Yeah. My spirits are lifted.
But he does have his moments. We were there for Christmas, and I'm playing, you know, old fashioned Christmas songs, and there's the Do You Hear What I Hear, and there's this line, said the lamb to the little child, and my dad, without missing a beat, goes bah. like he can't remember what he just ate literally 5 minutes before, or if he just ate five
but he's
minutes
sharp
before.
Man, when it comes to
but,
that stuff,
you know, he has his wit is still there.
More animal sounds. That's the answer.
More animal sounds.
Animal sounds. Just talking animal sounds.
It was good seeing you yesterday. We're in the studio. We're recording a new album right now, and it's coming along, I think, right? I mean,
absolutely.
We're getting there.
Yeah.
We're getting there. We don't go in like a 6 month block. We go like, you know, a week here and a week there, but
chunk to chunk.
There.
Yeah, we'll get, you know, Bob will come in for a chunk of time, and we just get in here. We come in here a lot for doing whatever, recording or rehearsing.
Hanging out.
Everybody
wants
to know.
Podcasts.
Yeah. They want to know when. I don't want to give them a date because we'll probably miss it.
Yeah.
But soon.
Is it slow because of all the violence that I hear about in the studio here? I mean,
Is
that what slows you down, or is it something else?
A lot of violence.
You know.
We come for the violence. We stay for the music.
We finished in the studio yesterday, and we're here doing a podcast with James today. We're going to get to you in a second, whatever. Yeah. But
surprise guest. We're making him.
You're interested.
Our wacky co-host, Blackball, he flew down from Seattle. That's where he lives. You flew down, and you brought the rain with you. It's fucking raining cats and dogs outside.
Made it in a plane, no problem. No panels flew out or whatever. That was a good thing. Although I was a little like...
Was it a 737?
It was a 737, but not the Max. But the stewardess did make me sit and they kept calling me the plug and had me sit like by the emergency exit. And I'm like, what is going on? Why are they calling me the plug? Put the plug there, because I'm like, that's not my assigned seat.
Do you wear your seatbelt now?
Extremely tight, especially in the emergency exit row.
Well done. Well, thanks for making it down. Thanks for
You bet. I want to thank you guys for not being on Epstein's flight log. So, yeah. Thank you for that. I wasn't worried when I was reading the names. But I was happy to not see that. So,
yeah, me too. Yeah,
that's right.
I never got involved.
Yeah, never got invited. Yeah. So, never had to worry about that. Yeah, that's. Wow. All right.
Yeah, all right.
I'm cracking up already. Right. Yeah. How is our guest going to follow that? So, well, so welcome, James. James Lilja. Dr. James Lilja.
Thank you. James
MD. MD. James, for people who don't know, James was our first drummer.
That's
if
right.
If you don't count Jim Benton. But that's not really.
He never really got drums, though. If he didn't get drums, he never even got a drum kit, did he?
Not really.
So
not
then
really.
Can you really consider him your first drummer? The first drummer we ever really played, you know,
sort
with
of a drummer in theory. But
was,
not was in practice, right? Yeah, the first real drummer we had was James. Yeah. And this is going way back to 1984. And James has been nice enough to join us today and rehash the old days and just catch up. And we're glad to have you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming in.
Well, yeah. Thank you, gentlemen.
This
I
is
appreciate
great.
This.
Yeah.
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 Part of, you know, we wanted to have you come down because we knew you wouldn't be like a boring doctor. I know you're a doctor now, but you're not a boring doctor. You're still...
like Patch Adams.
Yeah, you're cool, Dr. Like,
yes,
Patch. Yeah.
Just like that. You know, that's what we usually do
that's
in the
I'm
field
talking
of
about.
Cancer.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. So where do we start? Where do we start? James grew up in our neighborhood. The kids are in our right
yeah,
neighborhood.
I
right?
knew James was actually friends with my brother, Darren, early on, like yeah. elementary school.
Yeah.
Second, third, fourth grade. And then I started playing in a band with you and Aaron Henderson, who's hanging with us
yep.
today, and Mike Mullenix. We called ourselves the Clowns of Death.
Clowns mm-hmm. of Death.
And you came over to a rehearsal at my parents' house in 1984. It was the first time we all played. I think it was the first time you played with a full band with
That's
drums
right.
and bass.
It was,
and,
yeah. It was very exciting. It was life-changing.
Yeah.
Actually.
And then you stole our drummer.
Yeah.
And then you stole James from us.
Well, we made some kind of deal. Someone said, oh, you got to talk to James. We needed a drummer. It was just me and right. Greg. And so you need a drummer. So, and James said, well, how about I'll be in your band if you be in my band?
I'm always very transactional.
Look at that. Sounds fair. That works, right?
Sounded fair enough. So yeah, I went over to Noodle's house. First time I ever played with him and James and a couple other guys. And it was like the room, because I'd only played with like one other guy or whatever, not even usually a real drummer. So it was like the room exploded when we did our first song yeah, together. Yeah. And it was like, this is fucking
that
rad, man. Yeah,
it's always fun when you get people in a room together playing
yeah.
live
Noodle's
music.
Living room. Yeah. That was the first time the three of us played together, I guess,
fun.
Right?
Where the magic happened.
That's
I remember
right.
you had this crappy, was it a Music Man amp or was it a PV?
It was Music
PV,
Man.
PV, wasn't
Music
it?
Man.
Oh, PV was later? I just remember the PV stuff always around.
We had yeah. a PV as well, yeah.
Yeah. And you had this little distortion box that you just plugged into the jack on the amp, and then you plugged the guitar cable into the jack,
yeah.
you know, and then you just switched a button. And that was how you got the distortion, and it was just really high-pitched, really trebly, and everything sounded like that. But didn't Bob find one of those recently? Bob Rock found one for you.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
so
he
actually
did.
Got one of those
yeah,
in the studio.
I got
again.
My first amp from a pawn shop, and it was $100.
Yeah, totally.
And it was a Music Man, which isn't necessarily a bad amp. It was a dual combo or whatever. But it doesn't. There's no gain on that kind of amp. It's not meant right. for that kind of thing. And so the pawn shop guy said, oh, no problem. Just plug this box in. You'll be fine. Yeah. $25, right? And so it sounded shitty, right? It wasn't meant for distorted guitar.
Right.
Meanwhile, Greg had decided to get the bass. And he got this little backstage practice amp, PV Backstage, which is totally not meant for a bass. It's meant for a little distorted guitar you play in your bedroom and stuff. And so it took us about a year to figure out that maybe we should swap amps.
That's what it was.
So we did, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the amp that I brought over to your practice and stuff. Anyway, right. it was really cool. And Clowns of Death went on to play zero shows.
Yep.
I think we did one party.
No, we were trying to play,
Jughead's
Dump. Remember that when I made that flyer? We're going to play a Jughead's mm-hmm. Dump. And she saw the flyer and then canceled the party.
Oh, wow.
Because she knew all the punk rock people we knew were going to show up. And she
okay.
said, my parents' house will get trashed. I can't do this. I'm like, well,
that's right.
that was the whole
that's
purpose
right.
we made
oh
this
my
band
God.
Up.
Yeah.
We're gonna play five songs at your party and Maybe we're going to destroy.
I actually thought you guys were more a little nerdier, man. I didn't know you guys were the rabble rousers.
Oh, yeah, sure.
West Garden Grove. No. We were kind of normal, sort of, but we knew people with names like Lizard.
Oh, okay.
Literally. A guy we knew, punk rocker, all the Coins friends that I hung out with, they were the shadier side.
The Coins friends,
yes,
for sure.
Yes, totally.
You were the one with the troublemaker friends.
But I wasn't one of them. Okay. I just liked being around them. I don't know why. It's like a tourist of evil, you know?
Right, right.
And so, yeah, I think she was afraid those people would come, and so then the party was off.
Right. Well, and
then we're like in limbo.
She's probably right.
She was right. You know, you're looking back, she's damn straight right.
That would have been
the smartest. I knew the Allisons, and I knew the Reynolds. And,
oh, yeah.
Worse. So. Yes. Worse, probably, than the
Yeah, even worse.
Yeah. So anyway, so the band imploded. That was it, right?
Well, actually, what happened is, you did end up stealing James, but I ended up going to,
because
you were writing songs that were good.
Yes.
Our songs sucked.
No, they sucked.
They sucked.
They were supposed to suck, though.
Yeah.
They were supposed to suck. They were supposed to be awful.
Yeah, we could have been good if we were supposed to be good.
Yeah. No. But at least we knew that and intentionally wrote garbage.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Stay in our lane. That's right.
Stay in our lane, yeah. So I said, why don't you con Noodles? Come on over to our side and be in our band.
Yeah. So then I went and watched you guys play once, and I went, wow, the songs are way better than ours. I remember, and we were still playing as Clowns of Death at that point. And then Dexter eventually asked me to join the band too, and I was like, this will be good.
You remember the drum set? You first gave me Jim Benton's thing, that thing that moved every time you played it. Like every hit, the whole thing flexed.
Because
you could lift the whole thing with one hand.
It was a Toys R Us drum kit, right?
Probably.
You told me it was Japanese or something. I'm like, I don't know. I don't know anything about it. And then
so
I had
were
that,
some of the best drum kits in the world, like Thomas.
No, but I remember you saying that. That was like, but that was the set.
Yeah.
So the set we put together after that, remember you introduced me to Arnie? The guy that cut cymbals, like he had all the cracked cymbals because I couldn't afford cymbals.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And so he would saw the edges off. So I had all these cymbals with like.
Whenever there was a crack.
Like a cat with an ear tag chopped out of its ear, like a tomcat.
Yeah.
To keep the crack from spreading to the center.
Yeah. And so the ride I had that giant wedge cut out of it because he would drill on top of the crack and then saw the wedge out.
I remember.
And then it would make this, it made a sound. But and then what was funny is, remember I went up to school, I was at UCLA, and someone broke into my apartment and stole the whole thing. And so that's when I got the Thomas Swing Star, because insurance covered it.
Okay, wow.
So, probably your roommate actually threw it out. Like, this is fucking garbage.
Fortuitous.
I'm throwing it in the dump, you know?
Yeah. So by that time, you went to UCLA, I went to USC. We were both pre-med, and then we would try to get together on the weekends and practice and learn new songs. And we still hadn't really played a show yet. I think our first show was in Santa Cruz, right?
Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
It was Club Culture.
And you found the flyer.
Yeah.
And we were still Manic Subsidal then.
We were still Manic Subsidal.
Pretty punk rock name, right? Black Quality.
I don't remember the. Did you find the Club Culture
punk
one?
Is fun.
You found the flyer and sent
your punk
I
test?
Couldn't believe it.
Yeah, 100%. 100% legit.
So
who came up with that name?
Scared Straight, White Flag, right?
White Flag.
Scared Straight. It was two other bands and then us at the opening. We drove all the way to Santa Cruz to open this crappy show.
Well, do you remember when Creasel's little brother vomited in the paper bag and threw it out the back window of the van? Like the little windows that open only this wide. So he stuffed it out the window and like, I thought we were going to get sprayed with vomit. And then it skittered across the freeway and sucked up into someone's grill. Do you remember that? And you're like yelling at us. Like, don't do that. And he's like, oh, I got car sick. Yeah.
That's all part of the adventure.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, because every show, I mean, it was so hard to get a show. If you got a show in Santa Cruz, hey, no problem, 400 miles away. We're stuck to get a show anywhere. But it became this big adventure. It was a road trip, right?
Yeah, because we played the afternoon, we played Mabuhay Gardens, which was a legendary punk club in San Francisco.
Right?
The next day with Burning Witches and a couple of other bands.
Yeah. And we were terrible. I mean, we were so bad. Like, if James made a mistake, he would just stop for a second. He would have to stop and wait, then figure out, and then come back.
Figure out where I was.
Yeah. And Noodles broke strings constantly.
All the time.
He broke a string during this set, and he didn't have any strings because the strings were in the car, so he had to stop, and he left us on the stage for about 2 minutes doing this while he ran out to the car.
In the car.
And grabbed a string.
Actually, it was my other guitar re-string. Was in the car.
Is that what it was?
I did bring a spare guitar. I just left it in the car. It's our second show.
The show, it was complete disaster. Just awful.
But do you remember the most anti-punk rock story that I remember? Was we were in L.A. Remember all the clubs were like booking no shows. All the hair metal died. And we were on Sunset Strip somewhere. I can't remember if it was the Whiskey or the Roxy. One of those places. And we were backstage. And someone broke a pipe after
we
played.
No, it was Madam Wong's.
Madam Wong's. Okay, maybe it was that. Yes.
It was Santa Monica.
And someone broke
a pipe. My
cousin
helped me get that gig. It was one of the other bands. It wasn't us, but
no,
we were
it wasn't
the punk
us.
Band.
And then like what they accused us, and I yelled at the owner saying, just because we're the punk rock band here, you think we broke a pipe in another room.
That's right.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, it wasn't even in our room, right?
No. I was like, okay, and then we went out back and remember
my cousin got in trouble for that because I was her, you know, she helped me get the gig there.
Yeah.
So Leslie, I'm sorry. Yeah, my cousin Leslie.
But then
I still
like
think
bands,
she
right?
thinks we had something to do with it.
I know,
I,
and then
I swear to her and she still kind of looks at me like I'm not sure.
But wait, remember, but
was
then
Lizard with you guys?
Well, who was the who was the hanger on?
What's that?
I said was Lizard there?
Lizard?
I don't think we brought. I don't think we brought anybody to that.
No,
show.
Yeah, but there was somebody with us. There was a kid that ran up to you when we were loading the van with a guitar that wasn't ours. He goes, "I stole this guitar."
No, that was it. That was at a rehearsal place.
Was it the rehearsal
place? Yeah, that was.
Oh, I'm mixing stories. This is the problem
that
getting
was a
old.
Trojan, right. Trojan, and I took it back and went, "Hey, one of our guys accidentally grabbed."
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Guitar.
I'm like, "You don't steal shit."
Yeah. Well, plus it was we used that place for rehearsal quite a bit, but this was a well. It was Leatherwolf. It was Leatherwolf's guitar. It was a BC Rich guitar. It was one of Leatherwolf's guitars. And they left their fucking vault unlocked. And one of our guys went in and
stole
the guitar.
And we gave it back, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to just give you his initials, J.H.
Okay.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
One of Jason's
friends.
Yeah.
Wow. And so we just took it back in. And
that's what like the first shows were about. But I just came across something today because you guys did last night a show we played with Agnostic Front in '86. And do we have that? Do we have that flyer? Okay, here we go. Somebody, I guess Ben, our illustrious producer, found the actual flyer.
Wow.
Wait, that says '88.
It says '88,
that's
but
old. That's not old enough. I mean, too old.
I don't think it was 88. I think it was 86 or 87. But it's possible it could have been 88. But that's definitely the venue. That's definitely the gig.
Yeah.
And Agnostic Front didn't even get to play because there was a bunch of skinheads and just people being dicks.
You guys
dicks.
Don't really fit on that bill. And that's a pretty hardcore bill.
Like, it was really hardcore, yeah.
That's a great show, but you guys... Yeah. Not really the
but you'll see on the map that says fire department right next to the gig, right next to the hall, and people were throwing beer bottles, like 40s, over the wall, and so the fire department just had it shut down, right? It was the dumbest thing ever.
Super smart. Punkers weren't smart back then.
No.
You know?
Yeah. It was gnarly. It was, you said hardcore, but a little bit, you know, kind of skinhead too, especially as you went more into the IE, I think it got more like that time or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But the amazing thing about this particular show is that James, for some reason, had a video camera, and those were not easy to come by back in the late 80s, right? It was shoulder mounted or whatever.
Yeah,
it was
big.
And
yeah.
You captured the whole thing, the whole day. We have this, it's like an hour long. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I watched it not too long ago. Some of it's kind of, you know, corrupted or whatever.
Yeah.
But it still takes you back.
I don't know, maybe we'll put together a clip and put it in there. And then, so now guys pretend like you just saw this amazing clip. Go, whoa, wasn't that insane?
Oh my God!
I was young and hot at one time, man.
But the footage is, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Right,
super,
and
super rad.
It's such a trip, right? Because
do you know
shows us...
like you went to Guitar Center at the beginning of it and got drumsticks. Do you know who was filming you? Do you remember who it was?
I don't know. I don't remember who it was.
I thought it was Aaron.
It might have been Aaron. Well, we can ask him, but I don't remember. But I remember I'm walking down the street. I'm talking. And we're going in to buy drums, and it's all corrupted and like it skips. I've seen that.
Yeah. Then somebody filmed us playing. Maybe Aaron as well.
Yeah.
But you see like all the old, you know, like Jason Kreisel is
Thompson
there, and Doug Thompson's hanging out.
Yeah, for sure.
And Ricky's in there.
Our manager.
So. Is that Ricky?
No, Doug Thompson. Remember he called himself our manager?
Yeah, manager.
He didn't manage anything.
Yeah, no.
So I have one question. One more question.
What's so cool about that, though, is like, I think when things finally happened for us, it was kind of like, oh, these guys are not, they're not real punk or blah, 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 right? And I like being able to go to that and go, well, actually, we were kind of there from the very beginning. We didn't know.
And we did that for 10 years before Smash.
No one helped us out, right? And we've got the video to prove it, right?
Yeah, we got the evidence.
Were you gonna ask something?
No, there was another, you know, my memory is completely scrambled, but where was the place where we broke out the wall of the abandoned house, ran extension cords from next door?
I think you got us that show. I think I did, somehow.
But where was it? And I remember Kreisel's mom gave me the human thigh bones to play drums with. Remember that?
Yeah. We did that at the high school. We did that at Pacifica.
Yeah, that was another thing. Like, yeah. And they broke at that show. They finally fell apart and disintegrated at that show.
Yes.
Did you play with the human bones at the house destruction party too?
Yeah, then the pieces all came off, and I lost the drums, and I had to get
that was one of the funnest shows, just because we got to play in this living room of this house. Like, all the windows and doors were blown out. People were taking sledgehammers to the wall.
Yeah, we sledgehammered the one wall out as a stage. Yeah. So the side room from the living room was the stage that we sledgehammered out. That was a great show.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
I know, where were you, man? You were really missing out. You came along way too late.
I came along way later.
You didn't come along until like 92 during Ignition or whatever.
Well, I think I started seeing you guys like it shows kind of like that, but I was in a parking lot drinking, waiting for
the real band.
Or something, right? I mean, yeah. And it wasn't until like Ignition came out when I was like, oh, shit. That's fucking rule. And then I started paying attention. And then right after I got Ignition is when I happened to be a Vinyl Solution going through, and I was like, oh, fuck it. Found the first LP, right, on Nemesis, and I got that. And I was like, oh, my God, I fucking love this. And then that's the history. And here we are.
And Blackball, is Blackball still your favorite song?
So Blackball, I was listening to the demo tapes on the way to the studio today. Ballroom Blitz, I was listening to it all,
But that cassette.
It was, I don't have the actual cassette, but I just have the, you know, I have it on my phone, my iPad or whatever, right? But yeah, and so then Blackball, I just absolutely loved, you know, but they weren't playing it then, you know, so I kept yelling, Blackball, Blackball, Blackball. And they're like, dude, if we play it, will you shut the fuck up and leave us alone? And I'm like, yeah, just play it one time. And I actually have video. I recorded that too.
I think he kept screaming for us to play it more too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like two songs
Come
later.
Come to Brazil.
Yeah, two songs later, I started yelling for them to play Blackball again, so literally right after I did it the first, they played it. So, yeah, it was good times.
So
but, yeah,
ended up becoming his name. We call him Black. That's how he got his name, Blackball.
I was like, oh fuck, here comes Blackball. Fuck, Blackball's here. Yeah.
Eventually, we just started laughing with you.
Yeah,
rather than at you.
Yeah. I brought a memento today to show just how far back we go. You know, we're talking about the old stuff, right, and all these shows and stuff. But I actually brought a yearbook, because we went to the same high school.
Oh my God!
So this is the Reef from Pacifica High School, 1983. It is so legit that Noodle's sister is one of the pictures on here. She's right there. Wow. It's kind of. Did you know?
Oh my God!
Yeah. You know Cheryl's on the.
My dad's in this.
Oh really?
Yeah, my sister was like homecoming princess. She wasn't the queen. She was like one of the princesses, and my dad is there with her. Yeah,
that's insane.
You get this the last week of high school, and then everyone goes around that last week, and they look for the page and they sign it, whatever. And it's, you know, have a bitchin' summer and see at the beach and stuff. And I thought I remembered that James wrote something kind of wacky, and I wanted to show him show you how.
Do you really have to do this?
How insane!
Yeah,
I want to say how insane Jane is, and James is, and I don't mean it that way, because I know you have a professional reputation to protect. So I don't mean it that way, but I mean like let's just say wonderfully creative. So you can go. Here we go. So, and I remember how this happened. We're in the chemistry class, and you started drawing it. There's a picture there too, Blackball. But
oh my God, it's got a math equation on it.
Yeah. So. But I remember because you told it as a story. This was total freeform, right? You started drawing the egghead, and you go, I'm drawing an egghead. And then I'm going, okay. And I'm like, wow, okay, this is more interesting than the usual autograph I get from people, right?
Right.
And then he goes, he's dancing. And so, and that's where the dancing stuff started, right? So imagine just the dancing, right? And then he goes, you know, he's thinking about trigonometry. And then the thought bubble comes up, and then he goes, he's dancing with lizards. And if you notice, he doesn't sign it. There's no signature.
You have to sign that.
Yeah. That is the autograph, yeah. And probably the best autograph I ever got in high school.
For sure.
I wanted to give you credit here in front of all these people.
Hold on to that. When I die, it'll be worth millions.
All these years later. Yeah.
Even the speakers seem anthropomorphic somehow, don't they? I see faces in the speakers.
Very expressive. So there you go. See,
glad you brought that up.
See, we knew.
That is right.
He had a lot of potential. Even back then, and you squandered it all on medicine.
On saving lives.
Yeah, I know. What a waste.
The
other funny thing that brings it back is, remember, they just had the punk rock bowling show at Las Vegas they do every year. I went with Aaron because Aaron was in Steady Brewing, and we went out to promote his beer.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I got to meet the Damned, which was cool.
Oh, right.
But we were backstage selling the beer. But when we went to the punk rock museum and saw your display, there's upstairs is that little room with the guitars that you can just play in, which is really cool. And so we were up there, and the guy that was babysitting the room for the museum was the same guy that set up the shows in the desert for us.
All those punk the FSP
bands.
Guy.
Yeah, it's the same guy. I took a picture with him. I was like, I can't believe you're, what? And he's like, I was there. He goes, yeah, you were there.
Wow.
He just happened to be there right there.
Happened to be there the day we walked in.
You know, I talked about how we'd have to go who knows where to do a show. Well, this guy in Vegas wanted to do shows, but no venues would have punk bands. So he goes, fuck it. We're going to go out into the middle of the desert or 40 miles out of town. We're going to set up generators and play. And so we used to do those kinds of shows in the middle of the desert, in the middle of literally nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And
it was a flood control channel, so it was this big three-walled cement kind of thing that had all these tubes at the bottom that people would just run through too, and or go out in and make out or drink beer or do drugs or whatever.
Right.
But it had the crappiest sound because it was like three cement walls, so it just reverberated.
Yeah,
it was really horrible.
And remember,
sound.
We played with Lethal Gene.
They did one.
Lethal Gene.
Oh, Lethal Gene.
Remember them?
Ernie and Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course.
The drummer played barefoot. Remember that?
What?
Vaguely.
I don't remember barefoot, but yeah.
But we actually got a show with Fugazi out there one time, believe it or not. Yeah.
Well, that was the Mojave.
Lengths, the lengths we had to go to.
Fugazi was actually Mojave where we played.
Oh, shut up. This is my memory. This is my memory here.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. One of those things.
Yeah.
That was a desert show.
Anyway, where do you want to go from here? So, but eventually you ended up going to medical school. Do you want to talk about all
Well,
that?
It's weirdly, I actually went into grad school first because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And so I was in microbiology, right, as a microbiology major. Right. I really dug it. And so I had this plan to actually go to grad school. And I said, I'll just do the master's because you can get a job as the yeast god of like the big breweries. Right. And yeast growth is a big deal, and it's complicated, and they're hard to do. And these beer companies, like, you know, Miller and all that stuff, they needed consistency. So they keep their yeast in these vaults, and they have like these high priests that manage it. And I was like, I could do that. I could do that.
Why is yeast hard?
Their biology is really bizarre. So they're not like bacteria. Bacteria are much more manageable, but yeast are a pain.
Eukaryotic, right?
Yes, they're very complex. And so anyhow, that like I was in grad school, and it was just kind of this hippie never land of, they said, hey man, you're going to be in the PhD program now. It'll be here forever. You don't need to do your experiments. Come play volleyball. And I was like,
weren't you guys sort of on the same track in college at one point, pre-med?
Both pre-med. I was at USC. He was at UCLA.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we didn't have that major, so it was just microbiology. So I had to pick a bio.
You can't major in med,
right,
pre-med.
Right.
So you have to pick a major. I was straight biology, and he was microbiology.
Okay. Yeah, but I wasn't sure.
I remember
honestly,
you guys.
I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Because I remember you guys kind of going back and forth, and there was this one, and I don't know why I remember this one thing. You were talking about Batesian mimicry, and one of you guys goes, oh, I thought it was Batesian mimicry. I've only read it. I've never heard it pronounced.
That was probably me.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. That's the thing about reading big words. You don't know for sure how they sound.
So we're not even going to explain what that is. Google it.
Yeah, so then when I was in grad school, I mean, I really didn't know what I was going to do, and I just kept going, and I loved science, so I just kept there. And then I took these classes in their medical school classes for microbiology, and I fell in love with it. And that's when I went and took the MCAT and left. And then they called me a traitor.
Oh, oh really?
Yeah. So you, but you
PhDs
were,
hate the MDs.
You were, oh, wow. You were pre-med as an undergrad, and then you thought you weren't going to be pre-med, or and then you.
Yeah,
ended
no,
up going
I wasn't. I mean, I just would say whatever the hell people said, you know, wanted me to say. Like my parents said, you're going to be a dentist. That's actually what they said. You're going to be a dentist. Don't you remember that?
No.
Yeah, I was, do that was where that. It started. Yes. You're going to be a dentist. Yes. A dentist. And I'm like, I don't want to be a dentist. Harvey wants to be a dentist.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, it comes from that old Christmas special, right?
I would like to apologize to my brother, Jess, if you're listening to this. He's a great dentist. Really
no,
good
no,
dentist.
It's a great job.
Does
I mean,
a lot of good things for decent, honest,
yeah, yeah, no,
people.
It's great, but that's not me, you know? Right. And so I was always being pushed around by like what parents and parents of parents, you know, like parents' friends told me I was going to do and all that. And so I just didn't know. So I was just drifting.
Yeah.
You know, so I wasn't sure. And so I would just say, yeah, I'm going to do this. And I just kept taking classes.
All right. Okay.
Because I like the classes. You know, I just, I really like being a student.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So
I think you guys both did.
Well, there's something very noncommittal about being a perpetual student, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I mean, in the sciences, and, you know, I'm a big proponent of the sciences, it's like you're learning the mysteries of the universe. As you know, everything's a little, you know, epiphany when you learn something like, wow, I didn't know that happened or this worked this way or,
yeah,
you know, and then you start looking at the world differently.
Totally. Like when you go, that's why I pee so much when I drink beer. Because your antidiuretic hormone goes down.
Yes!
It's affected by the alcohol.
It's amazing. My Asian friend turns red when he drinks alcohol because he has no alcohol dehydrogenase in his stomach. That's fascinating. Did you know that you have... And you're like, shut up, James.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The mysteries of the universe.
We would have these. I remember these conversations like on, you know, Friday and Saturday night, you know.
Yeah. You're just always feeling playing, like the stupidest person in the room, right?
You'd start off like, just playing, you know.
Okay, now, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. That's right. Back to punk rock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both sides of the brain.
Yeah,
used,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was a great way of impulse control for me by playing drums, you know. It gets it out of you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And so at some point then you decided you wanted to go to medical school.
Yeah, yeah. It was in grad school when it hit me that I could not be in hippie Never Never Land, and I really did like medicine. You know, because once I took the classes, then I was like, there's a whole world I don't understand. I need to go there. You know, I need to see that.
Right,
and
yeah.
I always wanted to help people some way. I just didn't know what that meant. You know, I didn't, like, how do you do that? You can just say it, but what does that mean?
Right,
you know,
right,
and so that's then I suddenly realized what it could be, what it could mean. I'm like, oh, that's for me.
Nice.
And so how hard was it to get into medical school then at that point?
I don't remember. I mean, I had a wall of shame and a wall of success that I glued to the wall of all the places that would, like, you know, reject me or take me.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And I flew all over just to see what was going on. I had this weird romantic notion. I must be schooled in the East. In the East is where they know more things.
Yes.
Okay.
Very patrician.
And they have, like, ivy on the walls and snow.
Right.
And they're very serious. And so I
so
went to Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh,
yeah.
Okay.
I ended up in Pittsburgh, yeah.
And how was that?
Well, I ended up in a house full of lunatics because all the misfits found me and I made another band, right? And so immediately was the house band. We kicked out the other house band and started being the house band for the medical school. And we got the entire party they would have every year with the house band playing with the American Students Medical Association, the ASMA or whatever they call it, AMSA, yeah, American Medical Students Association. We played there and then we got banned immediately. And they canceled the party from there on out. We couldn't use the school property anymore. And like,
oh, man. Oh,
so no matter where you've gone, you've brought this band thing with you.
I have, actually.
The band follows you.
Yeah,
hey,
I did.
Band.
So I did that. And so, but we were the clowns of death in the basement when we'd switch instruments and then do something else. And so I would sing for the clowns of death in the basement of my house.
Okay.
And then we'd like all switch instruments like from the band guys and the boring people would go.
I like that you kept that going. Because it's a name we stole from Oingo Boingo.
I know. Yeah. But I just love the name.
Yeah,
so it's
it's
so perfect.
Can you tell me about the band you started called the Sons of Cecil? And what is
that?
Oh, that
was
the
house band. That was the house band for the medical school.
No,
so.
Only medical students would understand the joke. So maybe explain.
Okay, so let me explain. I can't believe you know this, which is really scary, and I'm really afraid where this whole podcast is going. But so the Sons of Cecil.
We're
going to get out the rubber gloves here in a minute.
Cecil Jacobson was an East Coast reproductive endocrinologist. And he was jailed because he was using his own semen to impregnate all these women.
Right? Yeah. So they
came in to get pregnant, and he used his own semen for the first.
Yes, he did. So there are like hundreds of kids that are all his kids. And so we made this big banner. I drew this big banner where I showed like, you know, like a genetic chart. You ever seen the pedigree charts?
It shows
like one guy and then this big line with all these, you know, his progeny of one guy. And so we just hang that. It didn't have any words on it. You know, we were the sons of Cecil. So we played bars. And,
that was your banner?
Yeah, that was
That's a punker name, the Manic Societal. That's a great name.
Yeah, isn't that great?
It was really good. Pretty funny.
Really good.
And then the next band, I went to residency and I formed a cover band there, and that was Taste Like Chicken.
Oh yeah,
so
I remember that.
Taste Like Chicken was a band that played everything on the radio because it was all the grunge time and it all kind of sounded sort of similar to me. So I said, everything we play, it's
like chicken.
So our symbol was this symbol with all the shadows of animals that tasted like chicken around it. And then we'd always have a big chicken head in the middle of it or whatnot. And we'd have these little flyers that we'd handed out. And it was really funny. So I learned this technique when I was in Taste Like Chicken of how to get gigs. So, you know, Houston's a great place to be, and there's all these
nightlife
places.
Houston.
Oh, sorry. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Houston, UT Houston was where I did my residency, you know. And so there's all these venues to play, like tons of them. But they're really hard to get into. And so we had this other the guy was playing drums because I was singing for this band. The guy who was playing drums had a friend that was in a band that was really serious called the Toy Subs. And they were, like, trying to be all big. And we got more gigs than they ever did because all the guys in my band were ER physicians or radiologists, and they worked at like 9 hospitals. And in the ERs, if you don't know this, ER crews, and I'm sorry if I'm offending anyone, are lunatic.
Yeah.
So they have like night shifts.
You would have to be a little like.
Yeah, they're tweaked. Yeah, yeah. And so, but they're fun. And so we would go around and hand out our little Taste Like Chicken flyers to everybody and say, come to our show. And the way I got the first show was I went around town drinking at different bars, and I found one place with an upstairs stage and a second bar. And it's this crappy, like, nautical-themed bar. I don't even remember what it was called, like Captain something. It was so lame. But we were drinking downstairs, and I said, hey, what's upstairs? The bartender was like the manager. And he's like, well, it's just, you know, we have bands there sometimes. I said, my band's going to play here. And I'm like, what? I'm like, no, I can't do that. I need a demo. There will be no demo. My band will play here. You will. And he's like, I'm not going to pay. I'm like, we do not wish your money. We're going to play here. We're going to be upstairs. Pick the worst night of the week. We get the door. You get the bar. What have you got to lose?
Okay.
And he was like, okay. And so we did. And we went and passed out those flyers. And the place was packed. Because everyone just knew us, and they were like, well, I'm going to go see his band. I'm going to see his band. And they all came. They descended on the place. Yeah. And so in the middle of the set, I'm walking off, and this bartender had to call in 2 other bartenders. He was dragging a garbage can overflowing with empty cups and bottles. And like, I remember this like it was yesterday. He was bald, and his like head was beaded with sweat. And he's like, you can come back anytime you want.
Of course, right?
And so then we springboarded off that. So then we play that a couple times. And then I would take that and I'd take his number. And I went to the next better bar, like had a better stage. And I did the same thing. It's like, my band's going to play here. And they're like, we need to see it. There will be no demo. Call Captain Jack's or whatever the bar and said, ask him how Wednesdays go. You ask him. And then you call me. Then I would leave. Right. And sure as shit, they would call me. Right. Wow. And they'd say, you could come here, you know, come here on this day. And then I kept doing it and doing it, doing it. And then by the time in 4 years later, so all this was funding our band space, practice space, and a more ridiculous light show as we went. We used to buy more and more lights. So more stupid stuff would happen as we went. Yeah. And then finally we played at one of the biggest clubs in town. And circling back, that other band was going nowhere. It's like, I can't believe Taste Like Chicken can play at the City Club. We can't even get a gig there. I'm like, well, you're not Taste Like Chicken.
Yeah.
Exactly. Did you make them open for you? You should have made them open.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think they would have stooped to that level.
Yeah. I'm getting a couple things out of this. The first is that I'm now realizing that your medical career is just a backdrop for your musical career.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Established.
That may be true.
And the second thing is how much fun these doctors can be. I picture a doctor coming in the morning in a white coat and a tie and let's discuss patient Johnson. But no, you're passing around flyers.
Yeah.
Tastes like chicken.
Yep.
For the party on Wednesday night.
Yep. That's what we do.
To this day. The doctor's party so much right now.
Now, Houston is where we reconnected with you because things were just taken off for us on Smash. And then somehow, I don't know how you got a hold of me, but you said, I'm in Houston, blah, blah, blah. And the story you told me was that you were literally unpacking your stuff for residency and you turn on the TV and there we were.
Oh, no, it's a little different than that, but it's very close. So I was in this house, right? There was just two of us in this house. We were rented right by the school and it was big. So this house was pretty big. And I was like flipping through the normal city rags that shows you like what shows are on. Cause I was always doing something in Houston and I run across Offspring at Numbers. Numbers was the place you guys were playing. I was like,
I don't remember.
Oh my God, someone stole the name. And like, and then I thought, wait a minute, maybe it's them and maybe they need a place to crash.
Could you guys play Numbers at that point? Taste like chicken?
No, we didn't play Numbers. But so I called down there and I called the guy that answered the phone was this guy. I don't remember his name now. Maybe it's the same person. I don't remember. Just like, and I said, hey, you know, is Brian there? And like, well, yeah, he's backstage practicing. I'm like, well, put him on the phone. I can't do that. I'm like, you can't do that. Who the hell are you? He's like, I'm their manager. And I started laughing because I remember Doug Thompson was our manager before.
Oh, right. Did you go, Doug?
I was like, come on. He's like, well, I can give you backstage passes. Like, okay, give me backstage passes. I'll be there. You know, I was just saying, maybe they want to crash on my floor. And when I showed up, you guys were shell-shocked because everything was taken off.
Must have been the tour manager at the time. I can't remember.
I don't know who it was, but
Jason, name. I think, was a guy at the time, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know who it was, but it's like, you guys were just, I don't know how this happened.
US tour.
I don't know what's going on, but we got to go right after this. We got no time. It's just crazy. And you told me what the schedule is you guys do. And I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy.
That whole year was nuts. The Smash.
We were doing like five nights in a row at that point, I think.
You guys all had sharing
hotel rooms.
But you had the 10,000 yard stare. You're like, I don't know where this is going. It's like crazy clown car skidding across the ice kind of look.
Sounds about right.
That's what it was like. Yeah. It's like you guys were just, we can't really do, we got to rest. We got to go. We got to, you know, we got to get on the bus.
Yeah,
was the kind of thing.
It was exciting, you know, but we didn't know what. Yeah, we were kind of like, whoa, is this really happening?
That
was a great show. It was a great show.
Good,
nice.
But it was just it was so funny because I was like, wow, you know, it's 10 years later.
Yeah,
you know, 10 years later, I figured someone stole the name.
right.
Damn
it.
Yeah, it's like, come on, come up with your own name.
Yeah. That's right.
So why did you leave Offspring? What happened? Like, was it for school?
It's just school and life and just, you know, it was just far away and I don't know, it was just the scene was kind of dying in a lot of ways. Like, it was like, remember the Nazi punk show? Those guys were in the middle of a mosh pit and I was like,
That might have been the
I don't know, it was like, just
there was a lot of those.
Yeah,
though.
The scene was just getting nasty. It was just getting mean and
It was less musical and it was just more percussive and kind of angry.
Yeah,
and
it was
physical.
Just like, and I've had my share of that, right? I went junior high school in Pacific and it's like, I'm done with that. You know, it just was too much and it was like, and I really got to study. And I really got it. Whatever I'm doing, I've got to get better grades than I did. You know, my grades were pretty crappy my first year, and I had to make up for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you were pretty involved in your frat too. You were in pre-med.
Yeah, but it was more like the UCLA. Studying. It was like that ruined my first year's grades. You know, it was just terrible. Like, so got to stop this. I got to clean up and stop doing that. You know, and so that's when I had to bear down and start studying, and I just had to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he settled. He settled for, you know, a career as a medical doctor.
So what kind of doctor are you?
Okay.
Sell out.
So I'm a gynecologic oncologist.
Ah, so you stuck with the yeast.
Oh, if I could strangle you right now.
Oh. shit.
Oh, fucking black ball.
Can we ask him to leave now?
Yeah, or... right.
Does he stay for all of these shows all the way through, or is there some point? Is there some point he goes away?
Oh my god.
No, it's all women's cancer, and then a lot of benign surgery too. So it's a highly technical surgical thing. We're trained in chemotherapy too, but we don't currently do it because our patients are coming from far away. So we usually have them go locally, but yeah, we're a surgical practice.
Wow.
There's four of us now. I try to recruit somebody on Monday. We'll see if they take the job by next month.
Different ways to treat cancer, and of course they tend to do multiple methods in tandem, chemotherapy, et cetera, but your specialty focuses on the surgical part of it?
Well, we're also, it's sort of a strange thing because a lot of general surgery stuff, you do the surgery and the patient goes away. We keep the patient for 5 years and sort of air traffic control all those other therapies.
Okay.
So that's kind of what we do because we keep up on our literature. It's very narrow. I mean, honestly, I treat 5 diseases, you know, so
really?
I can be really dumb and still do this. So it's, you know, it's not as much literature to keep up with. Like, say, if you do just general medical oncology and you've got to treat every cancer, you know, they're right. Wildly different.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So ours have, you know, we have a certain body of literature. You know, it's, you can stay on top of it because it's not that many diseases.
Yeah.
And so you can still read up and be an expert at it because it's narrow.
Okay.
It's a narrow field. And then the surgical stuff is all practice, obviously. It just becomes how.
So on surgery day, how many are lined up? How many operations are you doing?
It depends. So roughly I'm doing 10 a week, you know, 10 surgeries a week. Not all of them are malignant. I mean, a lot of them is like, is it malignant? You know, is it
right.
Another problem? Or it's the stuff that the generalists don't want to do. So
uh-huh.
If they have a case that they're saying too many surgeries prior, too sick, you know, like medically sick,
because
uh-huh. We're dealing with medically sick all the time. You know, we're dealing with comorbidities, as we call it, other diseases with your disease,
right.
Hypertension,
okay.
Diabetes, you know,
right,
obesity,
right.
You know, all that type of stuff. So we're like this narrow little oddball surgical subspecialty. And so that's what we do.
You said malignant, maybe. Is it the kind of thing where you don't know until you get in there? Or even once you get in there, you don't necessarily know?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, cells can be microscopic, so you never really know how things are going to go until time passes. We have lots of machines, we have blood tests, we have things like that, but everything really is an educated predictive guess.
Uh-huh.
Right? Everything is. And
can
so you never know, but you can predict sort of.
Can you kind of look at it once you open it up and go, oh, this is one of the
Yeah,
other.
So you have your eyes, you know, so you have a little bit of diagnostic stuff, you have imaging, you have blood tests, you have just general, you know, condition. You can take a history and physical, make one guess. Then
mm-hmm.
You do the surgery, you can then have the pathologist look at what you got. You know,
mm-hmm.
How extensive it is in the materials you send out, which is called staging. That's like, you know, grade and histology is what is it? You know, what are the cells like? What are they? What's their name? It's the demon's name. Then where are the demons, right? The staging, like where is it?
Mm-hmm.
So you have what and where, and stage is where. Like, is it in the lung? Is it in the liver? Is it some
right.
of the lymph nodes? That's the part where, like, when we stage, we give that material to the pathologist and they say, this is stage blank.
Right.
And then you can make another prediction. You know, after that, you're like, well, you know, based on the literature we have, here's your recurrence risk. Here's what's long term. But everything's just a prediction. You know, we're wrong a lot because the body and cells are very complex. You have an immune system and
right.
Our treatments constantly evolve, too. We actually have hit immunotherapy is now coming into more norm. We're getting it more mainstream. And the results when people respond to that are miraculous. You know, so. And what I like about this field is, first of all, I like female patients because I hate guys like you. But, you know, know-it-alls or freaking fancy thought. No, women are great. Women are great patients. They're really great patients. They're just fantastic to take care of. And the field I chose has a lot of hope in it because the things we do work. So that's one of the things that attracted me to it is, like, number one, I like taking care of women. Number two, the stuff we do actually isn't like, you're doomed and we're, you know, mitigating it. We get that.
Right.
But oftentimes we actually win those battles. So it's a great field to be in.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Cool.
So that is great.
I'm going to ask you a question. I know the answer is it depends, but as a guy, as an expert, how are we doing with cancer?
Well, it's actually pretty amazing. So we have two classes of drugs that I like immunotherapy, like I mentioned, and then another one that deals with DNA salvage and repair. So these things called polyadenosine ribose PARP inhibitors, they basically they target the salvage pathway that messed up cancer cells have to use to go make more DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take these pills after we do, say, ovarian cancer, after they get an operation, they could take these pills and suppress growth for like years
uh-huh.
and sometimes win. And so it's changed everything. And uh-huh. this is in the last 5 or so years. Uh-huh. And then the immunotherapy has become got FDA labels in just like the last couple years. And when people respond to that, some of the studies haven't reached full survival. So like both of those, we're seeing these long-term responders we didn't see just a few years ago.
It seemed like immunotherapy was really hit and miss and often miss.
Yes. Yes.
Can you explain, guys, like, what is immunotherapy?
Okay, what we're talking about particularly.
Duh. No.
There's a couple.
Lost. I have no idea what's going on.
Cancer bad. Cancer bad.
Yes.
Listen, I wore a fucking cancer bracelet. That's as far as my knowledge goes.
Well, you know, it's not a mystery. It's basically, so there's a lot of, when tumor cells live in you, right, they're your cells. But they're messed up and they don't have growth restriction and they don't know where to stay, right? Okay, so they end up in these different places. Then they have metabolic processes that happen that may make you sick. So a lot of people have tumors and they're not doing anything. They're just there. And a lot of people have tumors that are progressing and growing into things, obstructing things, doing stuff like that. And then a lot of them that are secreting something that makes you sick.
Okay. Right.
So those are all the possibilities. But the immunotherapy that's been most effective is really, really interesting because
what is immunotherapy?
It means using your own immune system to attack those cells as foreign now.
Because your own immune system knows when a virus or COVID comes in and it recognizes it and it surrounds it, attacks it, blah, blah, blah. But the trick is, why doesn't your immune system attack and kill cancer cells? Well, it's right. Because they're self cells is the problem. So we need to teach immune cells how to recognize cancer cells as foreign and need to be eliminated.
Gotcha.
Sorry.
See, you would be a great medical host. and that's exactly it. So we now have antibodies that can go after the immune recognition molecules that are being blocked by the cancers. The cancers are actually telling the local surrounding tissue, no, we're one of you.
Right.
And now we have these antibodies, you know, PD-L1 and PD-1 is the actual receptor. You've heard of this, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. PD-2, PD-3,
anyways,
whatever it takes.
We always have stupid abbreviation names for like everything. So you have to remember this salad of like just abbreviations.
Right.
But anyhow, these immune markers are shut down and the immune cells are quiescent or they don't do anything. But when you give these people these drugs, suddenly they're unmasked and like, whoa. You're not supposed to be here.
Oh, okay.
And so we're getting responses like 20-some-odd%.
So it's a drug
13 to 20-some-odd percent.
That unmasks the cancer.
It unmasks the cancer. Okay. And now suddenly you're like, whoa, no.
Gotcha.
And then it clears it.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing.
Great.
So,
oh, man. That's,
you're saying 15 to 20%?
It's around there.
I'm
like
sure. It depends, though.
It depends. It really does depend on, you know, the person or whatnot. We don't know why some people respond to anything and others don't. You know, we don't really know. We just know we have a population that might respond.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how all studies are done. We have, you know, 500 people and we did this and it seemed to work for this percentage of people with this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try to apply that to people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do.
Have you dealt with any, I know they're coming up with therapies where viruses are packaged to target certain things. Or have you dealt with any of that kind of stuff? Is any of that promising?
Well, ironically, that was what my project was as a fellow and it was a total dismal failure. But there are things like that are happening. They're not mainstream in my field yet.
Uh-huh.
So none of that's going on for me.
But the immunotherapy, you think promising?
Oh, well, it's already has been. So just recently, we have one for endometrial cancer, and there's also immune-linked target molecules that carry a chemotherapy with them. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing that's been happening. We tried that for years and years and years. There's one that came on the market now that may actually show that for folate receptors. So it's a drug immunomarker combo. It gloms on the cell, and then the cell takes in the drug, and it's done.
Right.
So there's that. But the responses aren't like they're not a number. The number of people responding is not amazing, but the responders are amazing.
Uh-huh.
No, that's the thing. It's like when you get that, you're seeing things we never saw before.
Right? And you've dealt with that in your own practice? You've actually administered immunotherapy?
No, I don't administer it, but I know about it. And when I talk to my medical oncologist, we collaborate.
Right.
And we say, hey, what are you going to do?
That's right, because you're basically a surgeon.
I guess I'm saying you've had personal experience with people who've been successful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
That's exciting. That's great.
Totally.
It's still, very cool. It's like
still new, but very exciting.
Yeah. But it also keeps you, you know, when you a lot of the problems with modern societies we're sterilized from bad. You know, a lot of things. You know what I mean? You're dealing with your dad now. We get that. You know, people get that all the time. Yep. But I mean, in the old days, people had bodies in their, like, you know, foyer for people to come from all around and see. Death was all around us. But now, you know, nobody expects it. So it's just such a shock to people when something like this happens. It's like, well, I was great. I was eating vegan and, you know, doing this and doing this. And now this happened to me. I'm like,
right.
Yes.
That's life? Is that what you're saying?
Unfortunately, it's like a car accident. You know, like none of us expect driving down the freeway in the rain, we're going to get killed. But any one of us driving out of this room, we could be done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. We just don't think about it. And yet I see that all the time. And to me, it gives me a good perspective on how like joyful you should be that every day you wake up. You know, I mean, I really am. It's like my patients give me that. They give me that feeling of like, you know, I should appreciate it and not sweat the little things.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. What a great story. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk about now the fact that you used to be in the Offspring and your patients know this somehow because of the internet. They know that you're in the band. And actually, I want to talk about the fact we used to do a song called Beheaded, right? And Beheaded's actually off our first album, right? Beheaded. I think it was probably influenced by Code Blue. We wanted our own Code Blue, right?
Yeah, so, that's what you said when you wrote it.
And I wrote the music, and I think to this day, it's the only song that I've ever collaborated on lyrics with anybody. James and I sat down, and we did the lyrics together, and we were just cracking ourselves up. What a ridiculous thing to say, you know. Watch you spurt like a garden hose. Like, it's very graphic, but very ridiculous, right? It's supposed to be that way. But I just thought of the interesting contradiction or whatever, or put together of you being a doctor who wrote a song called Beheaded, right? How that, I wonder if that could be a problem with anybody, right?
It never has been.
Yeah. Until now.
No! Until now. Yeah. No, it never has been. I mean, it's just, everyone knows it's art, you know, and everyone knows the ridiculousness of the past, and everyone knows.
Your patients aren't concerned going, I got this new doctor. He wrote this song called Beheaded, but everyone says he's good.
Isn't the song pretty clear? It's tongue-in-cheek, though.
If you don't know that's tongue-in-cheek,
you'd be surprised what people don't
understand.
Yeah.
Well, what about your parents? The first time you guys played that song for your parents, Mommy Doesn't Have Her Head Anymore. Like, your mom, check out the song I just wrote.
Our mothers were always the whole time were messing with them growing up. They knew. They're like, another one of your, you're just trying to pull my string and push my buttons. I get it.
Right.
Nothing you can say or do is shocking anymore, son.
I never played it for my mom. Your mom, I think, had a sense of humor more than my mom did.
So how is it with your patients and the fact that you had a history of the band?
They love it. I mean, the ones that recognize it love it, right?
You sent us something recently where a patient was a big fan, and I think they kind of waited till like after surgery, and like the first thing she said after surgery is, "Can I get your autograph?"
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's and that's like mine. Yeah. Why me? I don't have anything to do with the success you're glomming on to me. Nothing. So
that's awesome.
You know, but yeah, there's like, for instance, now like just there's a story. You know, I've got this merch in the room to sign.
Yeah,
there's a kid that came to our show named Julian, who was at our show that I played at, and so he was texting his grandmother. And saying, "Hey, Grandma, I'm seeing the show, and you know, James Lilia is playing on stage." And she said, "James Lilia, that's my surgeon." So she,
Dr. Lilia?
and Julian is a mad fan of yours. I sent you the little video of him in the office with me because she brought him to the office.
Right. Yeah.
And he said, "Would you sign this for me?" I said, "Well, you know, I'll do more than that. I'm going to go down here. I'll bring this stuff with me. Maybe you'll sign it for him, right?"
Cool.
You know,
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
and he's just awesome. And I sent you the video, you know, of him saying, "I'm Julian." You know, it's like pretty cool. Right. And so he's thrilled. And so that's what I'm saying. People like it. I mean, they like it.
You once told me, you said, like, I can't go like a week without somebody coming to the office.
Oh no, going, you can't.
Aren't you the guy? And you're like, you know, no one thanks me or recognizes me for the decades of work I did in biology or the countless lives I saved, but they're fascinated by the fact that I was once in the Offspring in the 80s.
Oh, no, I've had that where literally I'd be in the room, patient sitting over here, husband's there, and the husband starts talking about this. Do we want to talk about
your wife's cancer?
The stage 3 cancer.
Do we want to talk about this problem first?
Now a little more pressing over here.
Now,
I think, what I did 40 years ago. Right?
It's like it's just someone who's like, "Yes, it's true. Yes, that's true." Yeah. I'm glad you like that. You
know? Now, I don't know if you want to talk about this, but you made some news about 5 years ago, right? You were kind of in the news for for saving a life that was not one of your patients.
In
you
trial.
We should tell this story. It's pretty weird.
It's hilarious.
It's really bizarre. Yeah. So we get to court. It's in Oakland, right? Because it was in Alameda County that we did the procedure.
All right.
And there's a riot outside. You know, like, there's a riot. I don't know what it's for, but I there's a riot outside the courtroom. Someone is protesting something.
It's Oakland. It's Oakland. Probably the Raiders won or lost or, you know, who knows.
I don't know. And see, and I was so naive at the time that when I went to court, I thought, you have your day in court, and I'm so naive and stupid. I thought, you're there for a day. It's over. You don't want to answer this question. We're done. Right. No, you have to do a jury selection first, and it takes days. And I didn't know that. So when they first show, my lawyer, a guy named Barry Marsh, one of the finest minds I've ever known. He's a brilliant guy. He was like, you thought this was going to take a day? Yes, Barry, I didn't know. Like, isn't it obvious? It won't. Oh, isn't that obvious? So, and so I had to cancel these cases. I had cases the next day, the next day, the next day. Cancel my all week.
Oh, man.
And so we're in this courtroom. The paralegal he has with him is an ex-ICU nurse and ER nurse. It's his paralegal. She switched careers. And so we're in the middle of this court thing. We're selecting people. And it's ridiculous. Like, they have these people, you know, you fill out your court form, like all these things. Like, one of the guys fills out this form, says, I hate doctors, I hate hospitals, I hate everyone.
And he wants to be out of there. Yeah, he just wants to go home.
I don't know. He's there. Yeah. And then the judge is like, he'll say, oh, okay, I know you hate doctors and you hate hospitals and you hate everything in the medical field and you want to cut everyone's throat, but can you put that aside
for
this case and judge this separately from that? And I'm like going, where am I? You know, this is not real.
Yeah.
And so first I learned it's not my day in court. Then I get this. And I'm like, this is so bizarre. And so what had happened was, while we were outside, the same thing you're talking about, a court reporter comes up to Barry, who knows him, my lawyer, and says, hey, Barry, what's going on? He goes, oh, she's a court reporter, blah, 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 blah. Huge Offspring fan.
Well, lucky you.
The court reporter.
Huge Offspring fan. She comes to the room to write a story, because I didn't know this either, being so dumb. Anyone can walk in a civil case and just sit down and listen. Write things down, whatever they want to do. So there she is, going to write an article. Ex-drummer from The Offspring sued for malpractice.
Oh, boy.
Right?
And I'm like, oh, my God. And she's in there, and I'm like thinking, oh, this sucks. This sucks so bad.
So when you say court reporter, she wasn't like the court reporter, like recorder.
Sorry.
Right?
Yeah, I made me.
She's a reporter.
She's a reporter for the court. News, she writes for this thing called Law 360.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. She's a journalist.
Journalist.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I live under a rock. I don't know what people's jobs are. So help me when I.
It's a great doctor. Terrible law.
Yes. Terrible at law. So
you're just thinking, this is extra attention I don't need, right?
Oh, I'm thinking this is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my God, how's this going to go? And, you know, I figure once you're in the court system, you're the public's chew toy, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And so anyhow, then we're in the courtroom, we're selecting people, I'm listening to these ridiculous statements, and we're going for recess, and the door's open, and one of the bailiffs or sheriffs or something pokes his head and says, hey, just so you know, there's a man down outside, you know, just so you know. And I figured they meant outside. So we get up, and we're wandering out, and there's this crowd with legs sticking out. We're like, the nurse and I look at each other and go, my God.
In the courtroom.
In the hallway.
In the hallway.
Right outside the door.
Okay,
I thought they meant outside.
Yeah, okay.
So we go out there, and I figured someone got beaten to death or something, like man down, meaning, you know, they're bloody or something.
Right.
So the guy had cardiac arrest. So we went down, and I'm feeling his neck, and he's got no pulse. So we started doing CPR, and then we were yelling at him, activate the EMS system, 911, you know, that stuff. And they bring over the AED, you know, the automatic
defibrillator.
Yeah, external defibrillator. So we put this thing on him. We're pumping his chest, breathing for him, and then we shock him. He had a shockable rhythm, which, you know, these things detect. So they're run by a computer. They look at stuff and say, this is something we should shock. We're like, okay, we're getting ready to shock him. And he comes back.
Comes back. You literally
get a pulse.
You save this guy's life.
So, but it gets better.
In front of the jurors.
In front of the journalists.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In front of everybody.
All the jurors, in front of the journalists.
It sounds like you're a hero.
It gets so much better. Then, you know, they come and take him away, and we go back to the courtroom.
Let's just stop though for a second and imagine how amazing, what a crazy twist of fate this is.
The
odds that this would happen to anybody ever in your life, ever, anywhere, and it just so happens to happen right in the middle where you're getting trialed for malpractice.
Right. Yes. And then
the irony.
Oh, more irony.
While a riot's going on outside.
More irony. He's one of my jurors.
He is one of the jurors.
He is one of my jurors being selected.
Right.
That is awesome.
Does he still hate doctors?
Well, actually, I don't know who. I don't think it was that guy, but I don't know who it was.
Yeah.
But it was one of the jurors.
One of the actual jurors.
So we get back into the courtroom, and I see my lawyer and the other lawyer with the judge in the front. I'm like, oh, no. This is not going to – we're not going to finish. I just canceled a week of patients, and we're going to do this again. Like, oh, my God. So then – like, you know, she comes out and says, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to cancel this case because, you know, this happened. And so nobody knows we do CPR. Nobody knows we shock hearts. This is like it's an unknown fact in the general public. Why is this contaminating this case? I don't get it. Carry on.
Yeah. Your lawyer, of course, didn't want this. So it was the opposing lawyer that says, mistrial.
Yeah. Mistrial. Yeah.
These jurors are obviously going
to be. They're contaminated. This doctor helps people.
This ruins my narrative.
How can I possibly prosecute this case now that he saved a life?
It's like, this is not known.
And the judge bought it and said,
and the judge says, yep, we're done. And so, like, oh, God. So then
would that be a mistrial? Is that what happened? Is that what
they call it? Yeah, it was a mistrial. So then I knew, I mean, this is already like two and a half years into this, right? Two and a half years for this to happen. Like, what kind of system do we have?
How dare you save that guy in the hall, you know?
You got to reschedule your appointments that you scheduled out.
Sort of.
Silver lining.
Lose half of them, you know, but I did. I get to, like, rearrange and we put things on and all that, you know, but that was great.
So what you should have done is walked by the guy, said, loser, and kicked him and then just kept going, right?
Well, then the trial would have kept going, yes.
Yeah, then the trial would have been.
Oh, my
still
God.
Alternate juror would have stepped in.
Now, there are other weird stories like that I've had traveling, but that's different. I don't know there used to be that people go down when I was around and it was like, what am I doing? I mean, I'm in Costa Rica. What the hell?
So you've resuscitated people more than
I
once.
I have.
All
and right. It's weird. I'm a gynecologic oncologist. Yeah. I've resuscitated, either assisted. One was resuscitation. Two more were just assists for people that were down. Three times before this.
You just attract that energy.
Yeah. I know. It's horrible.
They somehow know that subconsciously they can.
I remember seeing.
Now's the time to get injured.
Yeah. And die. Almost die.
I remember seeing a guy have a heart attack at a baggage claim one time after a long flight from somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I just heard this woman screaming. And at first I just thought she was. I didn't get it, and then I realized, oh shit, no, her husband's down. It's something, and it didn't look good. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a story like that in
their drummer did nothing. Just stood there.
Okay, you guys need an upgrade.
That's true. We were so pissed at him, too. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Come on, man.
This is what you do.
Hey,
Yeah. Yeah. So, I trust that the subsequent trial worked out. Everything worked out okay.
So, well, it's even weirder. So then at this time, we go back, and I'm like, what do we do now? And then I hear that the plaintiff is going to go to binding arbitration now instead. So it was on James Corden's monologue. It was
That's right.
It was in Mexico City, major newspaper, London,
really?
People magazine. Yeah. This explodes, right? And I'm sitting at home, and my wife calls me and says, how do these reporters have my cell phone? What the hell happened?
Oh, shit.
Yeah, reporters are calling me. Reporters are calling me about you. And I'm like, what? They are? And so I said, I don't know. Don't answer anything. You know, so we answered nothing, and it's so weird. They had all our cells, and they were calling and calling and calling and calling, and, you know, we weren't going to talk about it.
You did have the one good quote. Do you remember what you said?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. When they told me that, you know, the case is being, you know, it's a mistrial, I said, no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. That's right.
Truer words, right.
So we end up, you know, she did not want to be back in a courtroom where you can walk in and everyone be a big circus. She didn't want any part of that. Then we ended up inviting arbitration and went very quickly. And so, you know, they had a pair of court costs and all that.
Wow.
But I mean, there's how many people did I not get to see from all this time? Like, I had to go to all these courtrooms and all this stuff and, like, cancel a day. And people had to wait for stuff. And, you know, it's just you never know how uncertain it's going to be. You can't keep going. And
that's not fun.
No, it's and we got people all the time. And this was at a time I was solo. I didn't have a partner.
Right.
So it was like one of those little interregnums that I didn't have a partner. And so I was like, it's all just me.
Business partner you're talking about.
Well, another GYN oncologist.
Yeah.
So there's always been at least two of us.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Hopefully there'll be three.
So you can cover for each other when when one of you has to be in court.
Right.
You
know, And Caitlin, if you're listening, take the job. We offered somebody a job last Monday.
Well, I'm glad decades later we could still help. But, you know, it reminds me, in the musician world at least, they say, you know you're successful when you know how to spell the word subpoena.
Yeah, for sure.
You already knew, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But that applies, I guess, obviously, either of your professions, Decker.
Yeah, it's just wild, right? I mean, that whole system is wild, you know. Yeah. I mean, I guess you have to have it so we don't all kill each other, you know, and you did wrong to me, so I'm going to come kill you. You know, at least we have some forum for that. But it's wild. The whole process is I never knew, you know, how lengthy it is to answer a simple question. You know, you think that all was answered and all the work leading up to it, so... Can we just have someone look at it and go, yeah, that doesn't sound reasonable.
That's bullshit. Get it out of here, you know? Yeah.
Crazy. Wow. Wow. What a life you've had.
Wow.
I know.
That kind of that, cool, right? That just the whole odds of everything, man, is just.
Well, that's why it went all over as a news story, you know?
It sounds like an episode of Sunny in Philadelphia, right? Like, it just, the whole thing is just comical from the surgery to the court.
When you're living it, though, I thought my career was over at the time. I was like, I'm done. You know, this has gone all over the world. You know, Lilia, malpractice. That's all I read.
Right. You don't even want the name, your name associated
with
that
word. It's like, what the hell? You don't know the story, and they're never going to know the story, you know? But people were amazingly, like you said, you know, talked about, you know, people saying, oh, you made this song. People overlooked it. It's just nobody held it against me.
You also saved a guy's life. Yeah. That was the main.
The proof is in the pudding.
Don't bury the lead, James. Don't bury the lead.
Shouldn't that be an automatic get out of jail free card? Right? Automatic, right? Well, it all came around full circle because then you joined us on stage. Just last summer.
Yeah,
it was fun.
Last summer
we
did a big U.S. tour, which was awesome. It was the biggest tour we've ever done, right? Which was great. And James said, can I play with you guys? I think it was something like that.
Well, a long time ago, you said, yeah, why don't you sit in with us sometime? I'm like, okay. And I, like, you know.
Yeah, I wasn't
like,
serious.
Like, bye-bye, you know, like. And so then when you came back, he said, and then I said to you, well, you said when you came up to San Jose that I should ask to sit in with you.
Just being polite.
But it was fun. When you said you wanted to do it, we got in here. We rehearsed a couple times.
That was fun.
Through it.
That actually was so stressful for me. You have no idea. When I came in here and played drums with you guys.
Really? That was stressful?
Well, I'm sitting there playing. You guys are experts, right? I do this on the side. Are you kidding? Right? I mean, literally, you're insane experts at what you do, right? You will notice everything, you know?
Be like us sitting in on a surgery with you.
Well, it's like, right? Any manual, a manual skill that you've been doing for decades?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. You're really, really good at this.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was super, super stressful coming down here.
Well, it was fun. It was fun. You know, you had family.
I had fun once you were here. You guys made me feel really good about it. Like, you were very forgiving.
You had a bunch of family and friends out that night.
Yeah.
What was their take on it?
Well, I bought a block of tickets for people, you know, that just to, so they could show up. And some people bought them, some people didn't, you know.
That's
whatever.
Why we agreed to let you in.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I told you I'd be
for the ticket sales.
I told you I'd be value added.
Sold out. It worked the last time, right?
Yeah, it worked the last time.
It worked with chicken. Tastes like chicken.
Yeah, no, they loved it. They loved it. I mean, they loved it.
Nice.
And so, it was just great. I mean,
your wife and kids were like,
"Yeah, oh no, they loved it." It was probably the only thing my kids ever respected me for. Is that?
Yeah, it was a fun moment. It was really cool.
It was really cool to see. But like a lot of the older fans, just to see it online, I wasn't there. But yeah, to watch the video, everybody just absolutely loved it. It was so much fun.
The video of that night that went viral.
Oh yeah,
and finally,
my daughters might think I'm cool.
Yeah,
it's like when Weird Al covered Pretty Fly for a Rabbi. All of a sudden, my daughter was like, "Wow, Dad, you're like in a real band."
Yeah, Weird Al put him over the edge.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Isn't life weird?
Yeah, it's funny. Well, kids,
No, the perspective of, you know, how
they,
your kids
they
look at you
keep and, you humble, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Dude, it was great. That's great cool. having you. It was awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. I think we could probably
go on. Maybe come back again some other time.
All right. Yeah. I'll do that.
I'm
it's
just
fun.
Being polite. No, I'm just kidding. Now, there's other stuff. I'm sure there's other stuff we could talk about. We can go back even further, right?
Right.
Right? Huh. Think of stuff.
Yeah.
Save it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll shamelessly ask to do it again, of course. I mean, I really don't have any shame, as you probably have determined at this point.
Madam Wong's thing, that was great. You brought that up. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, it was really great to have you. It's great to see you again. You know, we go through life and, you know, our friends from the past often don't stay our friends, you know, and it's great after all this time and after being in a band together and having, you know, things go different ways that we've come back and we're still friends, and it's great to see you. So,
well, I mean, you guys are also very normal people. You know, you don't have any of the weird stardom stuff that makes you not human anymore. You know,
we don't hang out that much anymore, do we, James?
Not yet.
No, I think for the most part, yeah, we haven't changed much.
No,
since,
no,
since
you really, were, honestly, you really haven't. Yeah. I mean, you guys are just like down to earth, solid people. You know,
yeah. I second that. Thank you.
Nice. Except for you, I don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's out there.
This is my new, like, this is as normal as I get. Yeah. So.
I know, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you again.
Take care, James. Nice to meet you.